Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting live and video streaming from our studios in New York City. Today, we have a lot to share. The latest on a new type of wheat that is causing a lot of positive stir in Canada. I'm going to talk about a new type of apple that I would suggest you not buy. It's a Frankenapple, like Frankenfoods, like in genetically engineered. For the athletes out there, a recent study, University of California, evaluated the difference between, well, a simple dried fruit and those electrolyte energy drinks that you all take. Interesting findings there. Also, I talk a lot about pH, meaning alkalinity, why the body should be in an alkaline state, slightly alkaline, not heavily alkaline, and what happens when we have too much acidic food or beverages. What does that do for the pain levels in our body and inflammation? There's a whole new development on that. I'll talk about that. And poverty, not mental illness, is the likely cause of anxiety disorders in poor mothers. So that's a good challenge. And this is for mainstream science, medical news. I will have a newsmaker guest in the second part of our program today talking about the media as an ecosystem, deconstructing the corporate media's mission of emotional transfer. Now, if all this sounds a little esoteric, well, it's because it is. And I'm going to be talking with Antonio Lopez. He is one of the younger generation of visionaries challenging the dominant paradigm of corporate government and media and social institutions. He is a media educator and a journalist, and we're going to get into this. Who controls the media? But more importantly, who controls the messages in the media? Because the messages are coming from every aspect of the media, so it doesn't matter whether it's Fox or MSNBC, Discovery or National Geographic, you're getting the same messages. So we'll get into that. From our commentary area today, we have several things. One is Apologies to Mexico, a commentary by Rebecca Solnit, and also from WRFN in Nashville, Tennessee, Obama, Monsanto, and Other Inconvenient Truths, a really good short commentary. A lot on the environment. Things are not looking up. So what should we know that the mainstream media is not telling us? I'll deal with that. We have a lot to share. And, of course, I will be setting aside time for you to call in later and ask questions or let us know what's on your mind. Let's begin. Consumers and food producers are not going to be having some additional selections when it comes to wheat. One is blue and one is purple. Scientists at the Guelph Food Research Agricultural Center and the University of Canada have been studying the potential of colored grains. Why? Because it's the color in the food that gives it its antioxidant properties. So the deeper the color, the more of these ORAC, or protective antioxidants, you're getting. Now, we know that wheat is a light brown, and when it's processed, it's white. Well, the processed white wheat is not good. But a whole ground grain, like a semolina, a durum wheat, is okay, if you don't have a gluten intolerance. Quote, it would also benefit the wheat industry as a whole because you will have more choices for farmers, for producers, for processors, and for consumers. So they've come up with these new colored wheats that are richer in vitamin C, vitamin E, and other antioxidants that protect our body. So that'll be coming at you probably next year. Now, something they've been working on for a while that concerns me, of course, they've been bring out genetically engineered salmon for some time. And a lot of those escape and get into the wild, and then they mate with the wild fish, and then that causes some unusual type of fish. Well, this is the latest on apples. I'll quote this. It says apples genetically engineered not to turn brown when sliced or bruised. A new unnatural proteins are being created in the process. This is an action alert. The Arctic apple, engineered by the British Columbia-based Specialty Fruits, thinks the non-browning apples could improve industry sales, quote, the way baby carrots did for carrot sales. Hello, there are no such things as baby carrots being sold. Yes, you think you're buying a baby carrot, you're not. What they do is they take those kind of gnarly, bent, distorted carrots and they take the centers out of them in a mold that makes it look like they're a baby carrot. They're not. So in any case, you have now genetically modified apples designed to fool the public into thinking they're something they're not. Quote, is it a rotten apple that looks fresh? This is according to the Lucy Sherritt, the Canadian Biotechnology Action Network person. And Sherritt also said the genetic engineering was, quote, designed to turn the apple into an industrialized product that could be sold in plastic bags instead of as a whole fresh fruit. She noted that a consumer poll commissioned by the British Columbia and Quebec Apple Growers Association found 69% of the Canadians do not want genetically engineered apples. The apples, which we'll likely see in the Golden Delicious and Granny Smith varieties first, contain a synthetic gene that sharply reduces production of polyphenol oxidase, an enzyme responsible for the browning. Okay, well, how about this? How about simply pouring a little lemon juice or spraying a little lemon juice on your apples if you've cut them and want to put them in a salad, the same way you would hold the color of an avocado or a banana? If I'm doing a display, which I'm doing all the time because I've just finished a major new cookbook and every dish looks like a gourmet treat out of Epicure magazine, I might have something sitting around for an hour trying to get the right shot and stylizing the food. And bananas, avocado, and apples, I use a lot of them. What I do is I simply take some fresh lemon juice, or you could use lemon concentrate, put it in a little tiny spritzer, and then you spray it. And about an hour later, spray it again. And by the way, you can do this with almost anything that is going to brown, and it won't brown. You really preserve it. And you can even do that if, let's say, you've cut up an avocado salad and you didn't eat it all. So spray it. Spray the whole salad with lemon juice, wrap it, and put it in your fridge. It stays fresh. We don't need anything more genetically engineered. In fact, this morning, very early this morning, filming in London, a major academic talking about the dangers of genetic engineering. Because I asked him a simple question. The latest study that has not yet been reported in the United States shows that animals fed genetically engineered food had all forms of health problems, including obesity and malfunctioning livers. That meant that it was disruptive at the very least to their hormonal system, but also I ask a basic question. Is it your belief that when we eat a genetically engineered food, it becomes a part of our DNA? And he said, yes. I said, because that's part of the rationale they give. Oh, it doesn't become a part of your DNA. Well, everything you eat becomes a part of your DNA. So if it's changing all these different animals' DNA, why would we assume it wouldn't change a human DNA? And they've never done a study, long-term study, on any growth-stimulating hormone at all. So we're being used as human guinea pigs. As an athlete, as a competitive athlete who's raced in over 600 races and won over 600 races, the last just a couple weeks ago, I'm always looking for ways that I can enhance my performance naturally and also maintain my energy. Because what happens in any competitive sport, the longer you're doing the sport, running, biking, swimming, the more fatigue your muscles have and the more lactic acid builds up. And as a result, the more inefficient you become and you slow down. So anything we can do to maintain that is good. So now they've done this. This is from the Journal of the International Society for Sports Medicine. And it says this. Eating raisins may provide the same workout boost as sports chews. Quote, this is from the University of California, Davis, studying the effects of natural versus commercial carbohydrate supplements on endurance running performance. Runners depleted their glycogen stores in an 80-minute run, and then they either were given raisins or sports chews that are generally just all forms of sugar. And, quote, raisins are a great alternative to sports chews as they also provide fiber and micronutrients such as potassium and iron, and they do not have any added sugar, artificial flavor, or colors. That's according to Dr. Painter, the PhD and registered dietitian from the group. Now, here's what I would suggest. Before you go out for a long-distance workout, or even in hot weather, short-distance workout, no matter what it is, or before you go to the gym and do your spinning class, simply have a 12-ounce glass of coconut water. Now, if you really want to spike it up, you can put in some vitamin C. Take it with 800 units of mixed tocopherols and tocotrienols, 20 milligrams of NADH, and 200 milligrams of coenzyme Q10, and 2,000 milligrams of D-ribose and 2,000 milligrams of creatine monohydrate. That'll give you backup oxygen. It'll help prevent lactic acid and hence muscle fatigue. It gives you a lot of potassium that your heart needs, and that would be much more preferable than any of these high fructose drinks that are otherwise being promoted and sold by the gazillions. This is the latest on pH. Now, normally you don't have the mainstream scientific community talking about pH in the same way that we would. This is from Green Med Info, Dr. Veronique Desaulniers, and here's what it says. I'll quote this. Effect of your pH on the development and growth of cancer. The human body's entire metabolic process depends upon one critical factor, the pH of the plasma fluids. The pH scale is very simple. The lower the readings on the pH scale, the more acidic you are. The higher readings, the more alkaline you are. Now, through what I've called many times homeostasis, the body maintains a healthy balance of the plasma pH, about, I'm going to say 7.4. Some people say 8, that's way too alkaline. Then you end up with local alkalosis. You can end up with all forms of problems if your body's too alkaline. Now, although the pH of the body will fluctuate every time you eat a meal, or every time you exercise, or every time you're under stress, or even when you're sleeping, I suggest between 7 and 7.5. Now, there are key factors that can create an unhealthy alkaline state, meaning making your body acidic. All high-protein foods, dairy, meats of all types are acidic. Sugars, acidic. Caffeine, extremely acidic. And refined carbohydrates are acidic. Exercising to extreme, fatigue, acidic. Emotional distress, acidic. So when the scales tip in favor of an acidic microenvironment, a domino effect is created. Toxins cannot be fully excreted from the liver and the kidneys, and that creates a favorable environment for pathogens like bacteria and viruses and yeast to thrive. Also, prolonged irritation of the cell membrane from the environmental carcinogens blocks the intake of oxygen. Now, I mentioned this about a few weeks ago on the show. The thought that we have been living with is, okay, cancer cannot exist in a high-oxygen medium. Not true. It can. It just doesn't thrive as it can in a low-oxygen medium. So, when the cells lack oxygen, it creates lactic acid and becomes acidic. This creates the perfect environment for cancer cells to develop and multiply. Now, here's where it's good. Quote, studies conducted at the University of Bari in Italy clearly demonstrated that a hallmark of all tumors, regardless of their origin or background, is their acidic environment. In fact, tumor progression increased with an acidic pH and hypoxia, or low oxygen levels. Women that are on a chemotherapeutic regime should also be aware that their acidic pH may be adversely affecting the chemosensitivity of the breast cancer cells. A recent study, quote, conducted in China indicated that a key factor in drug resistance to chemotherapy was the acidic environment of the cancer cells. So, what do we do about it? Where's the good news in this story? Well, awareness, what causes acidity, is good, but the takeaway message is this. There's a very promising research conducted at the University of Arizona, Department of Pharmacology, that supports the idea that alkalizing the body with baking soda holds promise as a natural treatment for breast cancer. Their research demonstrated that oral intake of baking soda selectively increased the pH of tumors and significantly reduced spread of metastatic breast cancer in mice. They concluded, quote, the dramatic effect of biocarbonate therapy on the formation of breast cancer metastasis in this model system warrants further investigation, end quote. So, I would also say, hey, you can also use lemon juice. That'll do a job on it as well. And finally, poverty, not mental illness, is the likely cause of anxiety disorders in poor mothers. Now, that's not coming from an alternative therapist like Bruce Lipton, who I'll be meeting with and filming, and Joseph Marcola, who I'll be meeting with and filming on Saturday. Instead, this is from mainstream medicine. This is from Rutgers University, as reported in Medical News Today, and here's what it says. Quote, poor mothers are more likely to be classified as having the mental illness known as generalized anxiety disorder, or GAD, because they live in poverty, not because they're suffering from a psychiatric disorder. Judith Baer, professor in the School of Social Work, and her team in the study, quote, said, is it generalized anxiety disorder or poverty? An examination of the poor mothers and their children. And then they published it in Adolescent Social Work Online. And the findings confirm everything I have seen out there, that the poorest mothers have the greatest odds of being classified as having an anxiety disorder. So we should be understanding this and putting some resources into helping people with their anxiety. I'm Gary Nall. We have a lot to share today. Now I'm going to go over to our environmental section and bring you up to date on all things, including a more in-depth discussion of wireless technology, you know, like your cell phones and computers. First, I believe that we do not help ourselves, nor do we make anything positive or possible if we deny and avoid the problems. We don't have to be all doom and gloom. Knowing something is bad means that we're at least aware of it and we can do something positive about it, but we're not. Here are the latest to show this. This is from Common Dreams. It's a major study. Quote, at least 70% of Arctic ice loss man-made. I'll quote this. Last week, an iceberg twice the size of Manhattan broke off a glacier in Greenland. This week, revelations surfaced that scientists studying satellite maps of Arctic sea ice melt were so shocked by the rapid melting of ice sheets, they concluded it was an error with their imaging equipment. It was not an error. These are just the latest in a long line of Arctic ice melting headlines that have dotted the newspapers over the last decade. But a new study suggests that the trend towards Arctic ice melt is here to stay, and that at least 70% of what's creating these events, man-made interference with the Arctic Ocean climate. This is a new study from the National Center of Atmospheric Science at the University of Reading. And it's bad. It says it's only going to get worse. Well, that's one of the tipping points in my documentary on the 12 tipping points. That film won't be out for a while because I'm still filming it. Now, this is another one. This is from NASA. NASA in disbelief over rate of melting ice. The Greenland ice sheet is melting at an unprecedented rate during this month. Quote, scientists say there has been a freak event in Greenland this month. Nearly every part of the massive ice sheet that blankets the island suddenly started melting. The ice melted so fast that scientists at NASA thought that their computers had glitches in them, had malfunctioned. For several days this month, Greenland's surface ice cover melted over a larger area than at any time since satellite observations. Quote, this is from NASA. This was so extraordinary that at first I questioned the result. Was this real or is this due to a data error? But after re-examining it, they found that it was real. Now, why is this important? Let's go back 6 years to a one-hour special I did, and then earlier this last year on the 12 tipping points on the Progressive Commentary Hour, which, by the way, has over 100 powerful programs on a single theme with the world's greatest authorities on each of these topics. So you can go back and listen for yourself. And here is, I will summarize in a minute what I said. I said that we are looking at New York and Singapore and all these major cities that are on the water, like Washington, D.C. and Miami, that are going to see a rise in the sea level. And on the East Coast of the United States, even more than elsewhere. And that's because Greenland is melting. Now, it does start to refreeze in the late summer and the fall, but the rate of melting in the summer, which is about 2 miles deep and is twice the size of Texas, when that melts, that could raise the water of the ocean 20 feet. But let's say it raises it 6 inches. That 6 inches is not just 6 inches. Well, you can say, so what? What's 6 inches? You have to understand the math involved. Each one of those inches means you're going to be losing upwards of about 50 feet of shoreline. But also when the surge comes in of any storm, it can go much further, which means it can go in the subway system, goes into the tunnels. Now you start to destroy your infrastructure. You flood your infrastructure. And then those who have homes at the beach, it starts to bring out the strength of the foundations. It alters it because all these are ultimately built on sand. And Dubai will be completely non-inhabitable within 10 years from now. $1 trillion city, gone. That I predict. But it's happening now. Recently, I was in Florida to do a film, and as I'm running up the beach, I notice at the bottom of buildings, I'd never seen this before that high, I was seeing seaweed from the night before from high tide. So the high tide is bringing in water much further because the ocean's rising. So we should pay attention to this, but we're not, and we do so at our own peril. Now, two other things. We're not paying attention to food. I've been saying for some time, for those of us who have farmland and are looking at doing homesteading projects, especially biodynamic and different types of greenhouse growing, we will be able to provide food for ourselves, our families, and to members of society. We can sell the extra amount or give it. Here's the latest. Did you see any of this in any of the major media? This is this morning. Quote from The Guardian. Lester Brown, who we've had on this show. The world is closer to a food crisis than most people realize. Unless we move quickly to adapt new population, energy, and water policies, the goal of eradicating hunger remains just that. In the early spring this year, U.S. farmers were on their way to planting some 96 million acres in corn, the most in 75 years. A warm early spring got the crop off to a great start. Analysts were predicting the largest corn harvest on record. The United States is the leading producer and exporter of corn in the world, and that is the world's leading food grain. At home, corn accounts for 4/5 of the U.S. grain harvest. Internationally, and the U.S. Corn crop exceeds China's rice and wheat harvest combined. Among the big three grains, corn, wheat, and rice, corn is now the leader. with production well above that of wheat and nearly double that of rice. The corn plant is as sensitive as it is productive, thirsty and fast-growing. It is vulnerable to both extreme heat and drought. At elevated temperatures, the corn plant, which is normally so productive, goes into thermal shock. As spring turned into summer, the thermostat began to rise across the Corn Belt. In St. Louis, Missouri, in the southern Corn Belt, the temperature in late June and early July climbed to 100 degrees Fahrenheit or higher 10 days in a row. For the past several weeks, the Corn Belt has been blanketed with dehydrating heat. Weekly drought maps published by the University of Nebraska showed the drought-stricken area spreading across more and more of the country until by mid-July, it engulfed virtually the entire Corn Belt. Soil moisture readings in the Corn Belt are now among the lowest ever recorded. And while temperatures, rainfall, and drought serve as indirect indications of crop growing conditions, each week the U.S. Department of Agriculture releases a report on the actual state of corn crop. This year, the early report was promising. That was in May. But now, as much as 70% of our corn crop is in decline. So that's going to be devastating, not to Americans, but to people around the world that use the corn and to people that use the corn to feed animals that then they eat. This is separately The Coming Economic Collapse by Peter Morrissey from Bloomberg and FoxNews.com. Quote, the U.S. economy is teetering on the brink of another recession. The bad news is that if it goes down again, there won't be much we can do to save ourselves. Like a weary heavyweight, if it hits the mat again, it's down for good. The expansion has been terribly disappointing. Growth is 1.5%, and jobs creations are terrible. Manufacturing export powered the recovery, but are now weakening. Consumer spending and existing home sales are flagging because policymakers failed to aid underwater homeowners as generously as the banks. Now, what does this mean? Let's go back to what I had said about a month ago, that anyone who can should start working with other individuals to try to put themselves in a sustainable mindset. The mainstream is only going to have bad news. The environment's going to get worse. We're going to have major drought. We're going to have major flooding. We're going to have major food crisis around the world and here in the United States. The value of homes are going to go further down. The dollar's going to go off the reserve currency. The dollar's going to go down. And interest rates sooner or later are going to go back up. And that's just going to smack everything value down again because people won't be able to pay the interest and the principal as they had in the past. Easy, low-cost money will be a thing of the past. So no more bubbles. So what, then, does that mean we should do? My suggestion? Look for places in the country that have good quality water and good quality soil. That's where we should be putting ourselves. Do it with groups. Do it with other people. We are now at the time where we must say, we, not I, not me. We've just gone through 40 years of unbridled egotism, selfishness, self-absorption, and the me-only philosophy. If we want to have a quality of life that is joyful and sustainable and live in balance with nature and its natural resources, we have to downsize, we have to create a more austere principle of living, and we have to respect the limited resources of nature and live with that. And if you do that, then you will always have plenty of food enough to help others as well. And that's a part of going forward as well. So think of that, because I can promise you the news is only going to get worse, and especially those who didn't pay attention. And by the way, this is from this morning when I mentioned that I asked this top geneticist, does any of the DNA alterations in the food get into our body? And he said, yes. And I said, could you give me any guarantee that that will never cause harm? And he said, no, I can't give you that guarantee. This is the latest. This is from Science Nordic, very respected. Quote, rats fed genetically modified food eat more and grow fatter than those on non-genetically modified diet. Since genetically modified food started to appear in shops in the early 90s, large quantities have been sold for human consumption without any harmful effects, as far as we know, but there is a risk for long-term impact. Then it goes into this study. Well, we have over 27 separate studies showing that it causes organ failure, all forms of damage, and yet the FDA, fully on behalf of the Monsantos, are denying this. Well, they can deny all they want, but this is reality. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to take a brief break and come back and take some calls now. It's your time to call in at 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Look forward to talking with you in just a moment. Welcome all of you. I'm Gary Nall. Tomorrow, I'm going to set aside a little time for those who are interested in doing documentaries to give you some insights on how to do a documentary. And I'm filming also tomorrow. And those who want to watch how it's done, how you do your setups, your filming, what you're trying to extract and how you do it, so you don't have to spend all day. You can do it in a quick manner. I'll give more information later on that. But you can speak with Dr. Nancy in our office at 646-926-5422 if you want to join that. I also still have some more clothes that haven't been picked up yet. And I've got new, brand new photographs of the organic, certified organic garden and the Homestead Project, so you can see the wonderful crops. Just, I don't know, I'm going to guess several thousand heads of lettuce have already been harvested and given, and we give everything away. I don't charge anyone, to homeless shelters and to churches. But just to show people that what they said couldn't happen, you cannot grow in Florida in the summertime. Yeah, you're right. You can't. You're wrong. I did. Take a look at what I grew. And growing. The whole thing's just still more and more is coming up. Those are all recent photographs taken 2 days ago. So, and you also see some of the new plantings. And what you do, you go to GaryNall.com, then click on Photos Video button, and then click on More Photo link to view the new photographs, and then each category. So, that said, we have a full line of calls, and I see, I was just informed, our guest is now up. We're going to go to our guest in a second, but let's take a few calls. Then we'll come back to our guest, then take more calls. Let's say hello to Dave from Brooklyn. Hi, Dave. Your turn.
How are you, Gary?
Doing great.
I have a question for you because I've been hearing different hosts from different progressive shows going back and forth about it. On one hand, they're saying the Dust Bowl phenomenon of the Great Depression era. Some of them are saying it was caused due to industrial reasons. Some of them are saying that it was environmental reasons.
It was not environmental. The Great Dust Bowl of the 1930s, which affected about 10% of the entire cropland in the United States, was due to monoculture, not putting green manure on. That means in the fall, when you harvest your let's say soybeans, you leave the soybean plant, and then you let that soybean plant act as a cover over the winter. Then in the spring, you plow it under, and that becomes the nourishment, the nitrogen for your spring crop. And you don't do that when you have wheat or corn, for example. And so they weren't resting the soil. They were planting the soil at full capacity every single year. Whereas if they had done it correctly, had they put down, let's say, 100 acres of mixed vegetables, and then the next year rested half that and used a different part of their land, then the soil would have always had a chance to rest. And then you rejuvenate it. But there was no rejuvenation and there was no rest. It was just take everything you can out of the soil until they destroyed the soil. It was, it had nothing to do with environment. It had everything to do with abuse of the soil. Thank you for your call. Anthony from New Jersey. Hi, Anthony.
When it comes to global warming, I heard a lot of stuff on it. Now, do you think it's due to humans, or is it due to our planet cycles and our planet moving into a different part of our universe? Because other planets like Mars are also, the temperatures are rising on there too, and there's not humans there.
It is due to a combination of natural cycles, but the dominant theme is human use, and you can check all of the real science, not the denial science. The real science that is not supported by the Koch brothers or those industries and front groups and foundations that want us to believe that we shouldn't be challenging industries to limit their exploitation of nature. We shouldn't be putting the people, we should not in any way limit industry from making us products or services that and also pollute the environment. The evidence is overwhelming. Our impact upon global warming. Thank you, Anthony. Eric from Los Angeles. Hi, Eric. Please speak up.
Oh, first of all, I'd like to say I'm very excited about your visit down here on the 4th. I'll be attending.
Thank you.
It's actually my birthday, so it's really awesome. It'd be the first time I see you, lecture and stuff. So I'm really excited about that. But more to the point, I was arguing with my uncle yesterday. I was trying to promote eating a more vegetarian lifestyle. He's got a bad liver and a bunch of health complications. And he was telling me that eating meats with starches is really what leads to digestion complications. And I'm not really sure the argument he was trying to make, but I kind of wanted to see what your idea was, because that's not something I've ever heard before. I wanted to see what your thoughts on that were.
All right. Did you hear my program the day before yesterday, 2 days ago?
Yes.
All right. Did you hear me give the paleo diet, the Paleolithic diet? All right. Why don't you just allow your uncle to hear that? Or you can go to my website. I have over 100 articles in the peer-reviewed literature showing you the dangers and the downside, the disease association between a meat-based diet versus the health about a whole grain diet or whole bean diet or a vegan diet. And then, since I just finished, it's already done. It's been sitting here. In fact, I had David Boulay, America's greatest chef, who was in it, take a look at it the other night. Got a very positive feedback. But all the top vegan doctors, Dr. John McDougall, they're all in it. And Colin Campbell, who did the China study, they're all in it. And see what the difference is between vegan physicians who've been able to improve or reverse disease in thousands of their patients versus the average doctor who can't say that. And they themselves are models of health. Neil Barnard is an example. The evidence is overwhelming. The science is fully on our side that a healthy vegan diet not only helps the environment, it lowers the global footprint of how far things should grow, be grown and shipped when you're using locally grown organic produce. But then you're not growing animals, 8 billion a year in the United States for human consumption, including our air with methane gas, which is about 17% of the problem. And that leads to global warming and also our streams and rivers. And if you doubt me, I'll take you down to where I filmed in North Carolina, and within 30 miles of a pig farm, you smell it. And everyone's water is polluted with fecal materials. So there's no, what you're dealing with is you're dealing with people who do not want to change their own life and therefore must dismiss the changes that have occurred in other people or deny the science that backs it up. Thank you for your call. All the best to you. Look forward to seeing you. Come over and say hello when I'm in L.A. That's going to be a hoot, and I'm looking forward to it. Let's say hello now to my guest. I'll come back to your calls, time permitting, at the end of the program. Antonio Lopez is the author of The Media Ecosystem, What Ecology Can Teach Us About Responsible Media Practice, which presents a new platform for proactively deconstructing mainstream corporate media and reconstructing an alternative that is ethically moral and sustainable. Nice to have you with us today.
Thank you, Gary. It's a pleasure to be with you.
I have just read a report from a person I have a lot of respect for, Professor James F. Tracy. And Professor Tracy wrote an article on global research that says progressive, in parentheses, journalism's legacy of deceit. Now, because of our gag policy on certain non-commercial radio stations, nobody could ever mention a word about any of the programs, and I understand that. But he really takes a challenge at one of the more popular programs on non-commercial radio, because that program is beating the drums for American intervention in Syria, as it was in Libya, and then beating the drums for, you know, the pro-Orthodox approach to AIDS and, you know, getting the drugs and pro-Orthodox approach to vaccines, and calls them out on it. But real specifically, instances and statements. Yet no one in the alternative media will touch this because they're afraid of these people. And so on the one hand, we're led to believe that the only people who are biased, the only people that lie, the only people that manipulate us are on the right, the neocons, surely not on the left. You've looked at all this and you have a different perspective. Could you share how susceptible we are on both the right and the left to the messages of those who are able to influence us? Not always in our best interest.
Sure, Gary. In my book, I talk about the media ecosystem as a planetary commons, which is, by definition of a commons, is something that all that we share. So one of the things I'm promoting is the idea that we have to build trust and have diversity and transparency in this ecosystem, because the ecosystem is a community, and to have healthy communication in a community, we have to have credibility and authenticity. So I believe very strongly that all kinds of media need to be ethical, whether it's right or left, and that ultimately any kind of media is an act of persuasion. You know, even things that we believe in, such as climate change, we have to persuade people to come on our side, but we also should do so in an ethical manner.
I'm not suggesting that everyone, either on the right or left, are unethical. I believe they're just misinformed. In fact, I've offered a conversation and proof. I handed one person, very popular person on radio and non-commercial radio, a large file of over 3,000 scientists with their qualifications and their statements challenging that we've gotten everything wrong on the war on AIDS. And I said, at the very least, would you examine the evidence that you have never used, never quoted, and I'm probably right if I say you're not aware of, and see if that will change your position. The person handed it right back to me and said no. So I think that we are stuck with our biases and don't want to change them, may feel we would lose credibility or of being the source. What are your thoughts about separating out people who are just not aware of the truth and are not that interested in going out there to find it if it challenges their formerly held positions?
Well, it's interesting because neurolinguistics have studied how people process information. And the old model was called the information deficit model, which meant that the goal for a journalist or the press would be, if people had the proper information, that it would somehow change their mind. But what it turns out, oftentimes when you confront people with information that contradicts their model of the world, they actually revert even more strongly to their previous model, because they're afraid to have their worldview challenged. So one of the challenges for people who promote, for example, the truth about climate change, is that we have to approach people at a level of the myths, because one of the things that dominates the media ecosystem is the mythological system promoted by marketers, advertisers, news, the propaganda system, etc. And these myths are very powerful. So it doesn't matter how much information we give people, it's on the level of myth that people are buying into these ideas.
Okay, I appreciate that insight. Now, as a newsmaker, which is a shorter interview, I was interested in your concept, and an original concept, and I thank you for bringing this to our attention, of emotional transfer. So I'd like, if you would, please, time remaining, to take us through what is emotional transfer, and then tie that in with some of the basic steps on how mainstream corporate media, through advertising and programs and the rise of reality television, engages in this emotional transfer to seduce us into buying into their message at the expense of our higher ideals and higher values? And then what would be some of the main techniques people can use to uncover the fraud behind them?
This is a very good question. And basically, this idea comes out of the media literacy movement. So media literacy advocates have identified nearly 30 persuasion techniques that are used in advertising, propaganda, and essentially there's three primary techniques that are used, which is to generate an emotion like fear or humor or sex that will create an automatic response in an individual, and then to associate that emotion with a brand. So typically a commercial has no information about a particular product, but it's a mini film that produces a particular emotion. And the idea is to transfer that emotion to the brand. And also politicians do this. If you watch, 30 seconds of any typical politician ad, you'll see the same process. And what we believe, those of us who advocate for media literacy, is that when people understand how this works, it actually creates the effect of the emperor wears no clothes. If you understand how these manipulation techniques operate, then it takes the power away from the manipulator. It actually empowers the viewer or the listener to understand how these messages are operating, and they cease to have the magical spell that they were intended to create. And so I believe personally that everybody should be educated on how to read media, and media literacy for me is the primary technique for doing this.
Good. That you made a very succinct and right on the head concept. One last one here. I'm doing what I can each day to try to get people to turn away from exploiting everything for their advantage to living a sustainable existence. Could you explain your ideas between exploitation or sustainability, since what most people do each day is exploiting situations, the environment, each other, other countries, and not looking at a sustainable model, which would be a healing and a pro-harmonizing model?
Yes, I think, the primary problem in our culture is that we've inherited this belief that the land or the living systems are there primarily for the use of humans. So that leads to exploitation. But this is also tied into the issue of what I identify as colonialism, which I think is still alive and well. In fact, one of the arguments I make is that the media ecosystem has been colonized by corporations. And they're not only colonizing living systems, but they're colonizing our attention. And these are related because if they can persuade us to give our energy to the corporations, we will be buying into a lifestyle that is more exploitative. So sustainability has many dimensions to it, as you know. It's multi-leveled, it's holistic. So one of the things that I find very important is that we have to draw our energy back to where we live, to our landscapes. You promote local food systems, and that's very important. And I think that also relates to rebuilding a local commons in terms of supporting sustainable systems. So I think that one way to restore sustainable commons is to also promote a open cultural commons, which is a place where we can share freely information to help and support each other. Shows like yours are very important in this particular process because people need to learn and re-educate ourselves about the best ways to support the land, our bodies, our spiritual well-being, and you certainly are not going to get that through corporate information.
Antonio Lopez, thank you very much for being on this Newsmaker segment. The book is called The Media Ecosystem. The website is worldbridgermedia.com and mediacolony.com. All the best to you, Antonio.
Thank you, Gary.
Now, I said that I would be speaking with taking more calls, which we were, and I just see Luann's up here on the line. But we also have from my office one of our more popular nutrition and health advocates who's here to help people. And by the way, just so people understand, I have sometimes 100 people a day who come by the office, and I can only see people if first you have a letter from your doctor showing that you are terminally ill. Then and there's a lot of them. I can't tell you how many I'm working with now. A lot. But everyone else who's not terminally ill, but has something that needs help, I've hired a very competent staff to help you with that. And it's free. It costs nothing. So one of those individuals is Dr. Nadia, and she's here with us now. Please sit down, Nadia. Hi.
Hi, Gary.
And you have someone you've been working with on the phone?
I have, Gary, a woman by the name of Claire.
Let's say hello to Claire. Hi, Claire.
Hi, Claire. Hi, Gary. I'm sorry. And Nadia, hello.
Hi, Claire.
What has been the condition that you were seeking help for, and what has been the outcome?
Well, what I really wanted to say is that I had just met Nadia not that long ago at your ranch, and she's a wonderful individual, and we have been talking about different things, and she did give me some different hints that were really very, very helpful, especially for digestion and the liver. But you know, her personality and the way she is, and she's a smart little lady there, that anybody that comes to your store and would like to talk to her, I would really say this is the person to talk to. She's very, very well has a lot of knowledge in what she's doing, and she's a fun-loving person.
Well, thank you.
Thanks,
did
Claire.
She pay you to say that? She did, didn't she?
No, yeah. She did not pay.
Yes, she
don't
did.
Say that.
You're two con artists.
I have to come from my heart, and I said, this is the way I feel about you, Nadia. I really, really like you very, very much.
A lot of people like Nadia because she has a wonderful personality, and that's one of the reasons. But let me say that we have many mm-hmm. nice personalities. They're there, Larry and all the others who are there to help people, and they've helped thousands of people. So for those who are looking for help, please don't show up at my office, because then I'm called out of my work in the editing suite or writing, and it's all day long. Just call 212-874-4000, 212-874-4000, and I've hired people to help you, and it's free. There's no obligation. They're there to help you, and they've got. And by the way, I do pay a lot of attention to the personableness of people, to those who are just kind and thoughtful and come from the heart. Okay? Thank you, Claire and Nadia. Thank you.
Thanks, Gary.
Let's go over and say hello to Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. On the same vein of what's going on with Nadia there, I've got an email about you. And this is from a woman who says...
I did not have sex with that woman. I don't think I did. Was she tall, blonde, Nordic looking?
Did you pay her?
I did. Not much.
Okay. All right. This is from a woman who says that she usually comes to see your lectures, and she always tries to bring her husband. And finally, her husband had joined her to come see one of your lectures about 3 months ago. They didn't have a reservation, so she understands that she was in the standing room only area. She says there were over 2,000 people there that she estimated for this three-hour lecture. And straight up, she says, her husband never liked you and often would leave the lectures and go to his office to eat and work while she stayed. And he always would comment that you were a nut job. Now I'm reading this, Gary. This is not coming
I'm
from me.
I'm a healthy nut job.
Uh-huh. But at this lecture, at the very beginning of the lecture, he leans over to her and says, write that down while you were speaking. Well, P.S., by the end of the lecture, she had over 24 pages of notes that she took that he kept on saying, write that down, write that down. He says, she's been to Tony Robbins events, she's been to Deepak Chopra lectures and all that stuff. She says, in this lecture, I don't know which one she's talking about, but she says, in this lecture, we found ourselves laughing while being quite inspired. She said, that night, you rocked our world. The most important thing, she says, is that now, when my husband and I have our us time, he keeps asking me what you were talking about that day on your show. Now, this is the first time that he's done this in, like, the 10 years that we've been doing this. And she says her husband is very well respected in his field, and suddenly now he's open to making changes that he would have never considered in the past. So she asks, I wonder how many times people who have been exposed to something new and exciting that didn't align with their belief system and actually engage in creating some positive changes in their life. She says her husband had not been there. Had he not been there that night, he wouldn't have been engaging in recreating his life today. And she feels that having him actually physically there, seeing and hearing you, is what made all the difference, because she has all of a whole one, not all of them. She has quite a bit of your documentaries and your books, and he never really took an interest. But somehow you engaged this couple. So what are your comments on that?
I don't know which lecture you're referring to, because I've done so many in the last 6 months, and they're always sold out. The whole purpose of me lecturing anywhere is to inspire people to make change, to reflect on their life. So when I leave a place, and I'm generally into a town and out in the same day or evening, I'm hopeful that the people will wake up the next day and say, instead of eating the bacon and eggs or the bagels and lox, maybe we ought to try some of this stuff. Or maybe instead of allowing people to call us and waste our time, maybe we should look about having people in our lives that are more constructive and positive. Maybe instead of gossiping and being angry or selfish. And what's the purpose of jealousy? Where is jealousy and spirituality on the same chart? They're not. So you can't say you're spiritual and then be jealous and envious. You can't say that you're filled with love and then be filled with hate and anger. You can't project out of people. And so these are the messages I share at these lectures. And they're all based upon reading the energy of the crowd. And every crowd is different. And so if maybe 10 or 15% of the people begin to make some positive change the next day, that's very good. And then it spreads from there. And if a couple can make it together, then you have people who have more to share. And I've had a lot of people have one person in the relationship that is changing, and the other person feels threatened by it. And is resisting and say, that's a cult or it's nonsense. And the other person's trying to say, but I feel better. I look better. I'm not on all the medications. Can't you see with your own eyes? I'm a different person. What proof do you need? My doctor didn't give me this health. So if I follow this information, I'm healthy. Shouldn't you pay attention to my reality? And that's the conflict that occurs. So if both people can do something together, where then they're growing together, that just excites a relationship. In effect, it rejuvenates a relationship. It gives a whole new meaning to a relationship. And I feel the best relationships are relationships where people are growing in the same direction for the same reasons, even though they're processing information from their own unique and personalized personalities. And I get a lot of feedback about that, and that's always good. But not everybody. Look, even at the last retreat, I had, as you know, I brought some of the best, Mitchell Rabin, one of the best inspiring therapists. I brought a lot of people to encourage and motivate people. I can't do it all myself. There's just not enough hours in the day, and especially when everyone's, pulling on me every second. But the best food, the cooking classes, everything was meant to inspire people. Some people got that message and went home and made changes in their life. Where they take it and how long they keep it up will determine what the quality of their life is in the future. Others came, they came with a bad attitude, they came negative, they came hostile, they left the same way. They're not going to change anything. And my concern is, think of all the people I have to be around those people every day. I mean, I only had to be around a negative person for a week. Think of the people I have to be around them every single day, at work or at home or a member of the family. But there is an option. Just stop for a moment and ask yourself, what do you want? Do you want happiness? Do you want joy? Do you want spontaneity? Do you want passion? Then that's exactly what you have to put in your mind, and that's the energy you have to put out. You can't walk around and be filled with love for life and people if everything you're doing is just negative and critical and punitive. You have to surrender your anger. You have to surrender your jealousy. You have to surrender your greed. You have to surrender your negative moods. You have to come from the dark side to the light side. But in our society, we like to balance by having dark and light together. All that does is create a duality of conflict. And that's where most people are. And then they run off to one of these, $5,000 for a weekend to meditate with someone, or read the miracle in this book. Nothing changes. No, you don't need any of this. to change. All you need is the discipline, determination, and the desire to be a better person today than what you were yesterday. That's all. And if I happen to be one of those many people, and there are many people out there, many, many people, doing good work as catalysts for change, that's all we are, catalysts for change, then good. I'm happy to be a part of that. And if that couple is happier today, if the man is making healthier choices, if the man is more respectful of the choices his wife made, then that's a positive. And that's good feedback. Thanks a lot, Luann.
Okay.
We're out of time. Sunday night, 8 p.m., right back here, All Health for the whole hour on TalkBack, the second most popular program on this network. First is the Progressive Commentary, and that's Monday night. Have a great week, everyone.